My name's Marty, and I'm very grateful recovering alcoholic. Very nervous alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 24th, 1991. By the grace of God and Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I hadn't had to take a drink or put a mood-altering drug in my body. First, Dirk, thank you very much for inviting me. I've known about this roundup ever since I've been sober and just never have made it. Like most things, I have to be forced into doing anything. And so thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate the committee. I've been on committees before, and I know what it takes to do this stuff. So if y'all would, let's give the committee another hand. Dirk, I complied. I've got a coat and a tie on, but I may have to shed the coat. So, I'd also like to thank the other speakers. What a wonderful lineup of speakers. Kelly's story Friday night was just amazing. Clear evidence of what God can do through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the transformation in her life into someone that spends her life helping other people. It's just amazing. She loves animals, and she also uses her animals to help other people. So that's a sweet spot in my heart also. And then Diane yesterday morning, I believe that every woman is built with that mothering instinct, and it's there, and it's uncomparable. But like us alcoholics, a lot of the natural instincts that God gives us, we take them way out of whack. And they become unuseful. And for also the transformation that God did in her life through Al-Anon, that unconditional love that only comes from a mother is in check, and it's applicable. And it's not out of whack. And it's limited, and it's just amazing. Now, I have found out that where's Andrew? There he is. The men Al-Anons are not so unconditional loving. I really didn't know what I was getting into. I was used to the especially my first sponsor's wife. Can I get you a piece of cake? Would you like some milk too? And I didn't get that from Andrew and Mark and Dave. But it is great. I really love those guys. I really like to see the strong Al-Anon members, male or female, that are in the steps, that are working the steps and applying the steps to their lives and allowing the steps to change their lives. And then, of course, Mike last night, phenomenal story. You just can't get from there to here. The change, I've got plenty, thank you.
Yeah.
You're doing good. Yeah. You practice a little more. Yeah. You didn't open it.
Amen.
The change and the willingness in sobriety to do what you can't do on your own. To walk across that yard and to make that amends. I've been there and I know what it's like. And more than that, the grace and mercy that his neighbor showed him. And it's clear that his neighbor had received grace and mercy. I know through my own experience that I can't give you any grace and I can't give you any mercy if I have not received it, because I don't have it. You know, I've been nervous all weekend. I've rehearsed my story several times, and I kept hoping one of these guys are really going to mess up. You know, they're just really going to have a bad story. They're going to do, you know, something. And, you know, it was just great all the way through. And I have an uncontrollable desire to make me look good in your eyes and to make sure that I measure up. Go up in the lobby last night. Where's Jeff? And Jeff's standing there and he says, "Well, that's a hard act to follow." And so I'm thinking, oh, geez, thanks. I don't know about y'all. 27 plus years of sobriety, I still am fighting the voices in my head that tell me I'm not enough. All the lies that say I will never measure up. I didn't create that. It's a verse from a song that I like. And what I know today is it don't matter what Marty thinks about Marty. And it don't matter how Marty sees Marty. It's how God sees Marty and how Marty can be. I told Regina Friday, I was really having trouble sleeping, that every time I laid down, I'd start rehearsing my talk. And she said, "Well, it sounds like you need to get Marty out of the way." I said, "Yeah, good luck with that." What a wonderful meeting we had Thursday night. You go around the room and the topic was God, or your relationship with God, or how your relationship came, that developed with God. And what a variety. It's just all different views and opinions and experiences. So the opinions don't really matter, it's just the experiences. And that's what everybody shared, was their experiences, how it came to be. And it's just across the board reflection of, a small reflection of how big God is. It's been my experience that only in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon can you do that and somebody not say, "Oh, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Now, this is the way you're supposed to see it. And this is the way you're supposed to come to it." So I'm very grateful for that. Also, my wife sends her regrets that she didn't make it up here. My wife is the hardest working person I know. She's just an amazing woman. We had been together, Philip, kind of, I don't have a joke, but I'll tell this, it's kind of funny. It was at the Mountaintop Roundup, and I had a lady from California speaking there, and in the hospitality room after the meeting, we were talking, my mother-in-law and my dad and my wife and this lady, and she had asked about how we, me and my wife, came together, and I said, well, we lived in sin for 2 years, and then we got married, and you know, blah 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 blah. And this lady standing there, and she's got this puzzled look, you know, for about a minute or so, and all of a sudden she just bust out laughing. And this was an educated, intelligent woman, and I said, "What is it?" And she said, "I've been trying to figure out where sin was." So if you're from the South, you know what that means, but. Or if you've ever met anybody in the South, we had been together for 4 years when I sobered up. My wife was a gift from God that I tried my best not to accept, and once I accepted it, I tried my best to ruin it unintentionally. My wife came to Al-Anon long enough to find out that she didn't cause it, and she couldn't cure it, and that's all she needed to know. And you know, her walk and her relationship with God is her business, and she has it. You know, it's different from mine. It looks different on the outside, but I don't know about y'all, but sometimes I think, you know, I got something that you need, especially with my spouse. And inevitably, when I get to thinking that, God reveals to me that they really have something that I need. And that's very so with my wife. My wife has shown unconditional, she has taught me more about unconditional love than anybody I know. Not just to me, but in all areas. And she's a redhead and she can get hot, but she has that unconditional love. Let's see. I want to, you know, I used to hate it when somebody would come to the podium with a big book. Like, oh no, they're going to read all the time. But there's a couple of things. I had to borrow a watch. I don't own a wristwatch. Something very important to me. I'm kind of a practical type guy. I'm task oriented. You know. Congratulations for getting the book, but I'm telling you, you know, 3 years to me is an old timer, okay? I love to listen to people with 3 years of sobriety. I love to listen to people with 6 months of sobriety. They keep me young and they keep me in the steps and they show me the enthusiasm that sometimes I lose as someone with a few years of sobriety. So congratulations to that, and I'm going to keep coming back, and I hope you do. Forward to the first edition, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So it doesn't say generally, it says precisely. And I'm a carpenter. And so, when I build something, when I do something, it's precisely this way. If, you know, I'm a country boy, so if you've got a nice crop of corn, and I want a crop of corn like yours, I'm going to ask you exactly how you did that. I'm going to get the pH in my soil exactly like yours. I'm going to do it the same way. It would be foolish for me to assume that I could just do a little bit of this The other thing that I want to hit on before I get into my story is what it means to me to be an alcoholic. And Mike alluded to this last night. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is a great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. And for me, that means that, you know, the phenomenon of craving is just overwhelming to me. There was a time when I could have a drink or a beer, but I never wanted a drink or a beer. Till this date, I have never, ever had too much to drink. I have never, ever satisfied that craving. I've thrown up to drink more. I've taken drugs to drink more. I've, you know, whatever. And then the main part is that it centers in my brain. And it tells me it'll be different this time. You know, it'll... Diane, you were talking about how you'd see things, and you'd, by the time they got back in here, they'd be different. And, you know, I've been in some really bad situations 10 minutes later, you know. Oh, man, I'd make too big a deal out of that. Ain't that bad? Of course, that was right after I had a drink, you know. I can remember sitting at the liquor store waiting on them to open, just coming apart. And when the man would pull up, I'd start calming down. He'd stick a key in the door, I'd calm down a little more. And I'd go in the store, and I'd go up the aisle and down the aisle. And down. You know, 5 minutes ago, I'm sitting out there coming apart. But I'm in there like I'm shopping. I know exactly what aisle it's on. I know exactly what shelf it's on. I know exactly how much it is and how many I can get. And get out in the truck and lay it down by and think, you know, I don't know what I'm so upset about. So the alcohol actually could have a power on me, just the fact that I knew I had it there. And of course, I'd say, well, I'm just going to wait a little bit before I have a drink. I'd start down the road, you know, I'd get about a half a block. Pull in behind some building where I could make some bubbles happen. And, settle down. You know, alcohol wasn't my problem. Alcohol was my solution. Micah alluded to that last night. You know, it's what held me together. I didn't know that. I drank because I wanted to, and I drank, you know, because I like that lifestyle in my mind. Early on, now, I had a lot of fun drinking. I can't, you know. I'll try to move on here. On page 45 in We Agnostics, our human resources is marshaled by the will, and that's very important for me today. My human resources marshaled by my will were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but how were we to find this power? Excuse me. And the next paragraph says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. It's not about me gaining information. It's not about me gaining power and control. It's about me tapping into a power greater than myself. Step two. On page 30, Ray, it relates to the, you know, that's the purpose of the stories in the back of the book, is to show how they had developed in their own experience a relationship with God. Now, in the and the three pertinent ideas be is that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. My wife is a power greater than me. I know that. I don't let her know that. Like she don't know, but so step two and B say that I got to have a power, something greater than a human. And so, now listen, all this is the way I see it today. You ask me a week from now and I may see totally different. And I am not trying to put me on you, okay? I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope as I see it today. As humans, we're in the natural realm. So if I need a power greater than myself and a power greater than human, then it's got to be a supernatural power. And so that's something way outside me or anybody else. Alcoholics Anonymous had given me that. I had a wonderful childhood of almost a Leave It to Beaver family. Blue collar family. My dad worked hard for not a whole lot of money. Mother was a stay at home mom. We had everything we needed. I was told how much they loved me and physically affectionately shown how much they loved me. All of us. I got an older brother and a younger sister. Neither one of them drink or do drugs. Never have. Well, my sister partied a little bit, but you know. To be honest with you, I didn't really have a problem fitting in. As I explained before, I have an uncontrollable desire to please you and make you like me and to measure up. And so that character defect helped me to fit in. And I could, you know, in high school, I could fit in with the guys and gals at Smoke Pit or, the other crowds. But I did have this deal where I thought everybody else had the game book, and I didn't. So I was a little bit at loss by that. So I used the what I call monkey see, monkey do. I'm doing it today. I noticed particularly how Mike had his name tag on his lapel, and I did my best this morning to mimic that. My wife wasn't here. By the way, I could not get the back of my collar right, and so I'm coming out, walking up and down the hall, waiting on the victim, and had to be female. And so Gail comes out, and she graciously fixed my collar and my back of my tie, I never did feel like I needed to fix anything, but the first time I drank alcohol, I liked what it did to me. It made me feel the way I needed to feel. I didn't know I was fixing anything. I grew up in a church. We went to Sunday school and preaching, worship service, whatever you want to call it. Typically didn't go Sunday night, we didn't go on Wednesday nights. And my parents basically lived a Christian life, And as a young kid, I loved the Bible verses, and I loved Jesus loves you, as I know, what the Bible tells me so, and I'd love that hymn, just as you are. And I loved all that. And I had a good relationship with God. I really did until I grew up in a church where I heard a lot of hellfire and brimstone. And it was kind of confusing because I heard about this loving God and then I heard about this ever punishing God. And so it was quite confusing to me. My relationship with God was really good until about 13, 14. And I started noticing the little girls in a different way. And the only thing I was hearing, my pastor was like a brother to my, he was in between my dad's age and my granddad's age, so he was kind of like a brother to both of them, and he lived across the creek from us. He was a vital part of my life from birth until he passed away. Well, I wasn't around much when he passed away, but so he was vital. But the only thing that I was hearing about these thoughts that I was having about girls was, don't think about it. So I tried that. The more I tried not to think about y'all, the more I thought about y'all. And I got baptized. When we got baptized, we would go different places, but it was always outdoors. But this particular time, we were in Little River, north of Little River Canyon. Extremely cold water. And so there was four or five of us, and he dunked me. And it was one of the most fantastic experiences I've ever had. It was wonderful. And I walked up just to the edge of the water, and I turned around, and he was going to baptize this young lady about my age. And so he dunked her in the water, and he raised her back up, and you know what water does to clothing on a female. And so I'm like, it didn't fix me. I'm having these thoughts. And I thought for sure that this would take and it would do it. See, I had the wrong perception. And so I'm like, well, I'm defective. And so, you know, I kept going to church and so I get in high school, and so the drinking has increased. Fort Payne, small town, small high school. We'd drink beer on Friday nights, go to the game, but nothing real big. But I really, really liked it. I always drank as much as I could, much as I had. When I was 15, I was 14 and my brother was 16, and we'd drive across the Georgia line to the bootlegger, which does not make sense. Why wasn't a bootlegger in Alabama? There was, but we didn't know about it. But anyway, we would get two tall boy country clubs each. And man, I downed mine as quick as I could. And for 15, I guess I was 15, and that'd give me a pretty good buzz, and my brother just sip. This sip, you know, and when, by the time we would go back home, he'd still have another one left, pour out part of the first one, and I'd be begging him for that second beer, you know, and he wouldn't give it up. He'd save it. So, to me, that's alcohol abuse. You know, Diane was talking about having a couple of drinks and starting to feel this, and so she put it down, you know. And I got friends like that. I'm like, man, get it on, you know. This is, you know, you're going to eat? I'm trying to have this relationship with God that I desired, but there was these natural things and these desires that I had, even other than the women, that seemed like they were pursuing me. You know, it just seemed like they were pursuing me. And so my brother had, you know, it's kind of like this in our church, you call it backsliding. So you kind of backslide a little, and then you go down to the altar and you rededicate yourself, and you get the Holy Ghost goosebumps, and you kind of, oh, everything's going to be great. And walk out in the parking lot, and there she is again, you know. But it didn't work, but... So my brother, you know, and that's kind of me and my brother were, my brother was a guy that just never did do anything wrong, you know. So at the age of 17, he had kind of been off tracks just a little bit, nothing big. Oh, he got, he was a leader at the scout camp, which is a few miles north of us up towards Mentone. And he and his buddy got caught drinking beer. And I think that's the happiest I'd ever been. He finally did something wrong, you know. He got caught. And so he ended up, he was what in my church was called to preach. And he literally heard an audible voice. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I've never heard an audible voice. But the Spirit talks to me all the time. You know, the Spirit of God lives in me. That's where He resides. So anyway, he was called to preach, and then so he's just doing right. You know, he's living perfect. You know, this is from my eyes. He's living perfect. And so I run off the tracks at 17 years old pretty bad, and I'm a runner. You know, let it... Just ask me a difficult question, I'm going to run. I'm out of here. I'm not going to face. I'm not responsible. I'm childish, immature, and irresponsible. And so I had run away from home over into Georgia, slept in the car, me and a buddy of mine. And next morning, I'm like, I can't take this. I'd never make it on the street. I mean, just I wouldn't make it. So, what do? I'm monkey see, monkey do, right? Even though my brother and I were so different in our lives, kind of parallel. So I'm like, he got called to preach, and now he's, you know, he's on what was referred to back then that I still don't like till today is that straight and narrow. And I've you know, y'all, some of you know me good enough. I can't stay on the straight and narrow. I'm sorry. And I understand that today. I understand the grace of God today. But so, remember, I guess intellectually, you know, so I come home from Georgia and I announce that I'm called to preach. Now, I know today that God didn't call me to preach. Marty called me to preach. Not like Andrew. I was in the church of Marty. He was in the church of Andrew. I was in the church of Marty. And so I preached a little bit. Maybe, I don't know, it was a long time. 6 months, maybe. And there, these things were calling me. And so I go to my pastor and I tell him, I said, you know, I'm just struggling here. And I asked him, I said, what if you just leave God and go your way and let God go His way? Now, what I'm going to tell you sounds like the wrong statement to tell a 17-year-old boy that's struggling with the idea of God. But he said if you stay gone too long, he won't have you back. So I made a conscious decision to go my way, not call on God for anything. I would be responsible for all the stuff that I get into, and then I'd be responsible to get myself out of it. And so, ooh, gee. And so that's what I did for the next, I sobered up at 35, y'all, that's 19 years, 17, 18 years, whatever. And wife number number one, I married her at 21. We stayed married 9.5 months. 9 months, 10 days, 11 days. And I ran her off because she had a drinking problem. So, in that sense, I'm so selfish that I can't relate to the Al-Anons in that respect. I just wasn't going to tolerate it. Get out of here. And so I ran her off, and coincidentally, when that was in 78, I sobered up in 91. I was sober 6 months, and that woman died as a direct result of alcoholism. I married wife number two. We stayed married 2.5 years. And of course, both these marriages was revolved around sex, drug, rock and roll, alcohol. My first wife, I was highly intoxicated when I asked her to marry me. But this second wife, number two, she had a drinking problem, but she didn't drink. Well, she drank a little. We did some of those other things. I could control it a little, but I was off to the races. So she wanted to talk to me about me not drinking, and so I ran her off. If you want to talk to me about me not drinking, get out of my life. And I don't have a clue that I'm trying to fix Marty. I just like to drink. Like what it does. The book says men and women drink essentially for the effect of alcohol. And it actually doesn't say that alcoholic men and women drink for the effect of alcohol. It says men and women. My wife, if she rarely drinks, but if she does, she drinks a little red wine, a half a glass, her ears start turning red, and that's it. She starts sweating. And I've got other friends, I've got a real close friend. He said, I used to drink one and a half bourbon and crown and water on the rocks. And he says, I can't even get one down now. I'm like, why you bother? Leave it alone. So anyway, I ran her off, and she and I had acquired a little country convenience store on the parkway going to DeSoto State Park. We divorced, and I ended up with a business, and I sold it, and there was a young lady that went to work for the new owners, and that's wife number three. And that's the one that I did everything I could to destroy. Even in sobriety, I did a lot to destroy that marriage. Fortunately, it was never known information. A lot of the things that I did, so grateful to God. We get together, we moved to Birmingham. I wasn't making hardly any money. I was in construction. Finally got hooked up in construction, started making some money. Let me back up something vital. In 1987, which was the year we moved to Birmingham, New Year's Eve, 85 to 86, I was caught with some cocaine, I probably can't tell you this whole story, but wasn't my cocaine. It really wasn't, but it was in my pocket, so it was mine. My judge, when we didn't go to court for almost another year, and when we went to court, my lawyer didn't even know what the case was about. Go in, I plead guilty. I had the cocaine in my pocket. I'm guilty. The judge gave me 90 days in jail, 2 years probation. My mother and I had always butted heads, and we were always at odds. But when the chips were down, she would rally for me. She couldn't help it. She couldn't help. I know the other part of my mother, she was trying to help me. She was trying to toughen me up and help me. When I was in the service and when I was in jail, my mother, and I don't write, never written letters, but when I was in service, when I was in jail, I wrote my mother. And my mother suffered horribly from this disease. Horribly. And I went to jail, I went and told them that I had to go surrender, had to go turn myself in that day. The judge had given me a week, and I said, don't worry, everything will be fine. He said I'd get out a little early if good behavior. So I said, don't come see me. I don't want you to see me in jail. And so I've been there about 45 days, and on a Sunday, my mother popped up. And during the week, I forget what day it was, you could go in the booth where the glass was, you know, where everybody could see you. But she came on Wednesday, where you come down the hallway between the sales and the bull rooms and everything, and you're looking through this weird-looking screen thing, and it was my mother. She sobered up immediately when I went in jail, and she was doing better. I could tell by her letters that she was doing better than she had done in years. And she shows up, and it was great, and that was on Sunday. And on Tuesday, I think, it was not a visitor day. And guard came and got me and said, "Your brother's here." So my mother had had a massive stroke and died. How amazing my wife is. Up until this, when I got caught with the cocaine, I was with another woman. I treated my wife horribly. I was very promiscuous. And she was the one that come got me out of jail. She had actually moved into my house while I was in jail, and she came got me and to go to the funeral. They let me out 3 days, and the first stop I made was a liquor store. It was the only thing I had. It was the only coping mechanism I had, and I was a total headache, nuisance, and just aggravation to my family at the viewing. Funeral, the whole nine. I think I cleaned up, whole deal. Well, it was just a mess. In my mind, I wasn't drunk. Of course, you ask an alcoholic opinion of what is drunk, and Al-Anon, what is drunk, and that's two different things, you know. But anyway, so I'm going to fast forward back to Birmingham. My wife wanted to further her education. She went to school for 100 years, but she has a good job. That's the main requirement of a good marriage, is a woman with a good job. Anyway, I got tired of hurting. There was an important thing. My dad had an aneurysm in his stomach, and he went into the hospital, and they did that, and he had some reactions to drugs, and I had to go back up and try to kind of calm him down. And I headed back to Birmingham early that morning, and I was thinking about my dad's drinking for all those years. And for the first time ever, Marty thought about not drinking. And so I thought, I was pretty sure I was down for the count, but I thought, I want to see about this. And so I didn't drink for 4 days, and she didn't even notice. My wife did not hound on me. I knew that it happened about once a month. After I sobered up, I realized that bills come to you once a month, and I was a breadwinner, and so, you know, but I was a high roller, I thought. I'd go to the bar, to the big round table, and buy everybody drinks, you know. But, so anyway, I didn't drink 4 days. I'd drink four beers, and then I'd go 8 days, and I'd drink, I don't remember, there. I had a mathematical formula. And in that formula, it must have involved 12 beers, because I bought a 12-pack. Now, I'm only going to drink four. And y'all know the rest of the story. Now, up until this point, I drink because I want to. Do not talk to me about me not drinking. I have paid horribly. The jails, the shootings, the fights. I nearly died in Fresno, California, thinking that I was fat. I thought for years that I was fast and I moved quick enough, and today I know he had plenty of time to pull the trigger, because the barrel was right here. And so But I was willing, I was the kind of guy, I assess the situation, and if I'm willing to pay the price, then I'll do it. If I get caught. Hey, if I don't get caught, that's a bonus. I heard early in Alcoholics Anonymous that you can do anything you want to in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did that. And I paid the price. There was a period of about 10 years. Well, wait a minute, let me back up. And so for the next 2 years, it was different. I'm drinking against my will every day. I knew about 1 minute at a time. I knew about 5 minutes at a time. I I'd be thinking, how can I not drink today? And 5 minutes later, I'd be thinking, where can I? I got to have a drink. And it might be in the freezer. That I drink beer. Vodka was my go-to to get me there a little quicker. And, of course, I drink. My favorite drink of alcohol was yours. So I'm in a bind, and I had conceded to the fact that I'm going to drink until I die. I'm going to suffer a horrible life. I'm not going to die young. I'm going to live to be 2,000 years old, and I'm going to have to continue in this. And I'm thinking about dying on a regular basis, but I ain't got enough guts to do it. Part of that was that I didn't want to hurt my family in that way, and I knew that I was hurting my wife, and that guilt and remorse, and I say that the outside situations wasn't what moved me, but the outside situations of the people that loved me, the guilt and remorse, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair moved me to that point. I'll just go ahead and call it by name. Cocaine moved me to that point quicker. I'm grateful, so grateful for it, because it'll really make you crazy. And me and a guy had been off for a couple of days, and my wife didn't have a clue where I was. We're out of money, out of this, out of that, out of credit. We come back across town, and I told my buddy, I said, just hang on, you're going to feel real bad for a little while. It'll go away, everything's going to be okay. This is no different from any other episode I'd ever done. I knew the routine. And 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, I'm not sure, God granted me the gift of clarity. I saw it exactly like it was. What it was. And I looked at him and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I can't live this way anymore. He looked at me and said, what are you talking about? And I said, I can't stand to live like this. And so I go home, and they are there. You know, those people, her mother and my dad, and I love her mother to death, great relationship with her mother-in-law, and they ask difficult questions. Real difficult question, like, where have you been? Or, you know, why do you keep doing this? And I didn't know. I didn't know. I didn't know either one of them. I kind of knew where I'd been. And so I hit my knees and on my dining room floor, and I slobbered and snotted and wailed and frailed, and I cried out to God. Now, see, my plan was to clean myself up a little bit, and then I'd go to God. Say, God, I'm doing better. Will you help me out? The problem with that plan was I couldn't clean up, period. Now, I was working every day, but, you know, that emptiness and that loneliness and that, it was just overwhelming. And so I cried out to God, and God didn't, God was not there, period, for me. And I thought, my God, what am I going to do now? And Virgil's voice rang out in my head, stay gone too long, he won't have you back. So grateful for God working through that man. See, God's ways are not our ways. When it looks totally wrong, it can be totally right. You know, it took every little second for every one of us to be right here. Everything, all back through my childhood, everything. Can't leave out one part. And so, a few hours later, now my sister's ex-husband, he and I used to do all that stuff together, and he had been sober about a month, about a year and a half in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and every once in a while my wife would say, I talked to so-and-so today, and Jay's doing good, and I'd say, that's good, he needs it. And so, look, guys, I just got a few more minutes. There's some vital things. If y'all get through listening before I get through talking, it won't hurt my feelings. So a few hours later, my wife comes in the bedroom. I was probably back there wailing and frailing. I'm at my end. I've cried out to God, and now he ain't going to help me. And so my wife comes back there, and she says, do you want me to call Alcoholics Anonymous? Bing! Yes. And I know the day that had God given me those warm, fuzzy feelings, kumbaya, and the Holy, what a friend of mine refers to as the Holy Ghost goosebumps. If he had done that, and then she'd have come and asked me if I wanted her to call Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, no, me and God, we got it. No big deal. And I know that I'd have got drunk by the next day anyway, because if you can get out of it that easy, why not? God will come in and fix that quick. Why not? And so here I am scared to death, and I'm going to AA, and we used to say, we're not alcoholics because we don't go to meetings. So here I'm going to something that I don't know. I'm scared to death. And God's not going to help me. Okay? And I come in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and y'all talking about God. And I thought, wait a minute. If y'all need to know anything about God, you need to ask me. Seriously. I can't remember who mentioned it. I apologize. But somebody mentioned that their religion nearly killed them. That my religion nearly killed me after I got in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The two things I had going for me was that I didn't want to go, but I knew I was going to drink again, okay? I knew it. I'd been trying for the previous 2 years, failing every day miserably. What hell are y'all going to do? You know? So I'm going to drink. But I'm up here with y'all's AA, alcoholism army or whatever it is. And by the way, you were corny. You laughed at like that. You laughed at stupid stuff, corny stuff. And I thought, man, y'all need to get a life. And this guy over here is making way too big a deal out of this. And I hated him for the first year. I literally prayed for him to die. He interrupted what I thought he interrupted my sobriety early on. Bleeding deacon. And he was just that. And we buried him Friday before last. And he had been my sponsor for the past 5 years. The two things I had going for me was fear of hurting like I'd been hurting. I didn't have a desire not to drink because I had to drink, right? It had quit working, but I could not forget when it had worked. I could not get rid of that. And so the other thing I had going for me is that I was always able to fit in. And whatever you're doing, Diane, you mentioned you didn't have a clue who you were. I didn't have a clue who I was. If I was in a group of people And they asked me a question, what I thought about somebody or about something, religion, politics, whatever, you know, racing, you know, NASCAR, or whatever. I'd say, well, what do you think about it? And then I might agree with that thought or I might disagree depending on what mood I was in. So I didn't know. But anyway, so here I come into Alcoholics Anonymous with an uncontrollable desire to please you and to impress you. Now I know the steps ain't got nothing to do with anything. I know everything there is to know about God. Y'all need to ask me. But y'all talking about these steps. I'm going to drink. These steps don't have anything to do with anybody. Because I wanted to fit in, I started working those steps. Against my better thinking. It wasn't my idea. It wasn't a plan I had. And I started getting what y'all were getting, even though I was thinking opposite. And so I know today it's not about what I think. It's about what I do. You know, it says that faith without works is dead. The problem with me is sometimes that I let my works overcome my faith and I start trying to create it. And the thing I know today, there was a spot. There's been a spot in my life, in my journey with this relationship with God, that He became my friend, and I love my friends, and I wouldn't do anything to offend my friends, and I'm always willing to help my friends. I love helping people, but I especially love to help. I just give me a glimpse of something you need that I can do, and I'm all over it. That's what I like to do. And so that whole perspective, when God became my friend, changed everything for me. I didn't want to offend Him anymore. And I wanted to be on board with anything He had going on instead of trying to tell Him what I had going on. And so today, I really, really worried about getting up here today. I knew that once I got up here that He would take over and everything would be okay, but I just have trouble getting Marty out of the way. And if I'm the only one in the room that has that problem, I'm pissed off. I'm really serious. You know, if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't be here. Today, I know that God goes ahead of me. God is never scrambling trying to figure out what He's going to do with Marty's situation. You know, I know today that before I was born, there was a purpose. I had a purpose, and God sent me to fulfill that purpose. I have found that purpose, and I'm whole. Mike talked about self-esteem. I've never had self-esteem. I've always had false pride and ego. And today it's about knowing my purpose here and fulfilling that purpose. The great thing about that is I get that happy, joyous, and free when I fulfill that purpose. If I keep Marty out of the way, Regina, I'd be a lot better off. But if I didn't have to deal with that natural man that's in this body, trapped in this world, which is not my home, I wouldn't be here. I'm so grateful that I'm an alcoholic. If I wasn't an alcoholic, I wouldn't know y'all. And y'all enrich my life. Y'all add to my life. And I'm so grateful for everybody. And I can go anywhere in the world and get the same thing. And I'm so grateful to my God. My prayer for y'all today is that God would give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so that you would know Him better. Thank you very much.